Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is difficult for me to believe, but we have already made it to midweek. A little more than a minute past the hour of 6 p.m. here on the East Coast. And it is time for three more hours of conversation radio like nothing else you're likely to find anywhere else. This, after all, is the home of conversation radio. This is the horn. And I'm just tickled pink to be with you and have you with me. Best part of my day. No kidding. It really is. And of course, this is the best part of my week. It is midweek. It is hump day. We are downhill to Friday. But it is, oh, so much more than that. And you know that, brethren and sistren, this here is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Choir Master!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches.
Sing it!
Thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
What am I talking about?
Jesus.
I can't hear you.
Jesus.
I still can't hear you.
Jesus
Christ our Lord. Do you know His name?
Hallelujah.
Have you seen His glory? Have you felt the warm and comfort of His precious love? Praise Jesus. Praise His holy name. Praise His blessed spirit. Praise His everlasting love. Jesus Christ our Lord. Listen to me now.
Thank you, Associate Pastor. And pass me one of them nice frigid serpents over there. I don't want one of them warmed up biting ones. Hallelujah. Ho! Glory, glory, hallelujah, praise. Welcome to the Cathedral of Common Sense, brethren and sistren. I am Archbishop Bob Kincaid, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Come on down the blood-red carpet, brethren and sistren. Lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of reason flowing through your body, making your toenails curl and your teeth a-tingle. How glory! Shamalahamalahisabah-ha-shalamading-dong! I love you. Yeah, it's prayer meeting night tonight. Prayer meeting Wednesday. We're going to get it off to a real good start. We got some sure enough religion industry news for you this evening that is going to absolutely inspire you. We got it coming out of the religion industry from all over creation. Now, you know what happened in the last couple of days. Iowa, by their court, recognized the obvious that denying same-sex marriage civil rights is a blatant violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. Vermont did the same. The District of Columbia agreed to recognize out-of-district same-sex marriages. Justice is flowing. Justice is rolling downhill. And that means, of course, that the fundamentalists are going to get all kinds of weird. Lots of money to be made out there on the backs of people who love each other and just want the same rights the rest of us have. Lots of money to be made on their backs, fear-mongering to the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful. Lots of money. They need your help. Oh, Lord, the National Organization for Marriage needs your help.
There's a storm gathering.
The clouds are dark, and the winds are strong.
And Dot...
Storms, clouds, dark... Well, hell, it's April in the South. You damn right that tornadoes all over... Oh, wait, it ain't tornadoes.
I am afraid.
Some who advocate for same-sex marriage have taken the issue far beyond same-sex couples.
Some? Who are the some? Who are the same-sex marriage advocates who want to have same-sex marriage? And what else do they want? Toasters? Huh?
They want to bring the issue into my life.
My freedom.
Yours? Mister, yours? Is some... Wait! They want to marry you, mister? Oh, dear, storm clouds are a-gathering.
Freedom will be taken away.
I'm a California doctor who must choose between my faith and my job.
And what does your job say, doctor? That you can refuse to treat somebody based on how you think they have sex? Or who they love? Or how they decorate? Or which China pattern they picked out at Macy's, doctor? Doctor, what are you doing with a medical license, you bigot?
I'm part of a New Jersey church group punished by the government because we can't support same-sex marriage.
Okay, those are actors. I don't mean to offend anybody, but there ain't nobody in New Jersey talks like that. Okay, let's back up just a second.
Because we can't support same-sex marriage.
Oh, come on. Even my New Jersey listeners will tell you that was not a New Jersey voice. Come on! These are actors. These are fakes. These are frauds. You should see the spear carrier in the back of the video here. He's standing with one foot forward, his back foot raised to heel off the ground, like he's getting ready to stride boldly forward. And do what?
I am a Massachusetts parent, helplessly watching public schools teach my son that gay marriage is okay.
Helplessly watching while the public schools teach my child that it's not all right to beat up somebody and call them faggot while you're stomping them. Oh, Jesus, help us!
But some who advocate for same-sex marriage have not been content with same-sex couples living as they wish.
No, they want same-sex houseplants!
Those advocates want to change the way I live.
I will have no choice.
You're gonna have to get all gay married? Oh! Oh, God! Oh, and here's the guy who was getting ready to walk forward, and there's a close-up of him, but I swear he's been honking on the good stuff. His eyelids is about half-mast. He got pupils like buzzard eggs. Let's see what he's got to say.
The storm is coming,
but we have hope. A rainbow coalition of people of every...
Oh, now stop it. A rainbow coalition? Jesse Jackson. Oh, Jesse. I think you can sue on this one, buddy. I'm pretty sure you've got Rainbow Coalition trademarked and registered. How about you drop the dime and get your lawyers on this one before these freaks raise any money on your back, too, Reverend Jesse?
Every creed and color are coming together in love to protect marriage.
To protect marriage. The problem is, all the way through this, and you know what? I'm going to turn around. I'm going to play this without any commentary. I'm going to be, you know, biting my lip. And I want to hear where the threat to marriage is.
Visit nationformarriage.org. Join us. Paid for by national...
Yeah. Paid for by a bunch of idiots, okay? But no, okay. Now I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to be quiet and just play this.
There's a storm gathering.
The clouds are dark. And the winds are strong.
And I am afraid.
Some who advocate for same-sex marriage have taken the issue far beyond same-sex couples.
They want to bring the issue into my life.
My freedom will be taken away.
I'm a California doctor who must choose between my faith and my job.
I'm part of a New Jersey church group punished by the government because we can't support same-sex marriage.
I'm a Massachusetts parent, helplessly watching public schools teach my son that gay marriage is okay.
But some who advocate for same-sex marriage have not been content with same-sex couples living as they wish.
Those advocates want to change the way I live.
I will have no choice.
The storm is coming.
But we have hope. A rainbow coalition of people of every creed and color are coming together in love to protect marriage. Visit nationformarriage.org. Join us.
Paid for by National Organization for Marriage, which is responsible for the...
And, of course, this is all... this was sent to us by our pal, Maura. And... have you heard... sure, you listen to this program, you've heard the like, but I haven't seen one like this in a while. This is stunning, and it's. But we have hope. Remember the guy. Hope. Hope's the new buzzword. We hope the gay people will just go away. We hope that the earth will swallow them, and that Satan will just grind their bones into dust and chew on them and have a barbecue with them, just like it promises in the Bible. Yay! A gathering storm? The last time I heard Gathering Storm, I think it was a documentary or maybe Winston Churchill describing the rise of the Nazis.
There is a gathering storm.
You know the rhetoric. Gathering storm. I am afraid. What are you afraid of, honey? Come on, sweetheart. Tell me what you're afraid of. We'll help. Are you afraid of your own feelings, sweetheart? Are you afraid of the fact that you're attracted to somebody you feel like you ought not be attracted to? And really, what does that mean? I'm a California doctor and I'm forced to choose between my faith and my job. No, you're not forced to choose now. You were forced to choose back when you accepted the medical license. You were forced to choose when you took the Hippocratic Oath. First, do no harm. And see, that's one of those little short sentences freighted with a ton of loaded content. First, do no harm.
Now, if she really is a doctor instead of an actor, then she knows that she can't pick and choose her patients based upon her impression of how they choose to live their lives. First, do no harm is complicated. First, do no harm includes not helping when you should help. Harm is both active and passive. And if that woman really is a doctor, although curiously there are no names attached to all these people saying who they are, nor is there any indication on the website of how to find out who these people are, because remember, they're afraid. You know, this is the tough part of being an actor. It's the reason I didn't follow through and go on and be one back when I was thinking about it. Because sooner or later, you know, like that episode of Friends, you're going to wind up in a herpes ad. Or you're going to wind up, in order to get a paycheck and make your rent that month, pretending to be a fundie, promoting hatred of one group by another in a country that is supposed to guarantee equality for all. It's not quite the same thing as, you know, James Earl Jones being the voice of the evilest person in the universe in the form of Darth Vader.
Luke, I am your uncle.
No.
Luke, I need the bathroom.
No. This is so much more evil. A gathering storm. They're coming to get you. They're teaching in our schools that it's okay for gay people to get married. Imagine what that they're teaching in our schools, that murder is acceptable. That's the kind of thing that would shock you if you found out they were teaching it in the schools. They're teaching in the schools that incest is okay. Oh, wait a minute. But no, it's nothing more complex. Nothing more complex at all than simple civil rights. And that just beats the stuffing out of me. Oh, the evil of these people. The horrible, back-breaking evil of which these followers of the Prince of Peace, supposed, are capable. Truly, truly, it is heartbreaking. But you know what? Strap in, because there's more heartbreak a-coming. But I hate to keep you guys waiting. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, this is Kate.
Oh, Kate! Long time no talk to.
It's Kate, yeah. Well, I've been busy. I've been living in Gulfport, Mississippi, and working for the Presbyterians and being the manager of a volunteer village, and everybody comes in from the job at 5, and I get stuck working, you know, so that sort of limits my social time. But I haven't been listening for a while. I think I'm ready to pack up. I'm fixing to go to, what is that, Iowa or Nebraska to get married?
You got you a sweetie? You still got to have a sweetie.
No.
Just going to go there and find one?
I could find one in the Presbyterian church.
Yeah.
Sure.
Or go up there and find one of them corn-fed sweeties up in Iowa?
Yeah, right.
Or go to Vermont and find you a maple sweet one.
Sweet. And I've been down here studying for my citizenship, and I just found out today that I'm really far. I'm ready to flunk citizenship because I put cheese on my grits.
I thought we talked about this.
She said, "See, you're just not there yet, honey." Well, if I use crystal hot sauce, would that? No, that's only good on your ice cream.
Now you are just making stuff up. Now
I'm not making it up. she says, I used to use Tabasco, but in my old age, I just can't do Tabasco anymore. You reckon it's because I'm getting old? And I said, I don't know. She says, well, you better try it. It's good on vanilla. I said, okay.
Now, I would never have seen that coming because I being a weirdo, and this is certainly nothing Southern, well, it's Southern insofar as the Valley of Mexico is a hell of a lot further south than Mississippi or Alabama. But a little bit of chili pepper with your chocolate.
I love it.
You will absolutely love it. I mean, it just brings the chocolate to life.
It does. It does. I love it. So why wouldn't Crystal work on vanilla ice cream? I don't know.
Well, you know, if you go back to those folks a couple or 3,000 years ago, they used, you know, because the vanilla bean is a form of orchid that blooms like mm-hmm. once every 7 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the chocolate that they drank, they didn't eat it. The chocolate that they drank was a concoction of ground cacao beans and ground vanilla mixed with water and whirled into a froth with a little bit of chili pepper. So it probably would work. See, it's not the chili flavor I object to so much as it is the vinegar taste. I can't imagine vinegar on ice cream being appealing.
I don't know, but she told me, and I trust her, she's the one that's going to grant me citizenship. And then I got to laughing on the phone the other day, and I said, oh, God damn, and that offends her so bad.
Oh, don't you do that.
She said, see there, Kate, you just know, how'd she say it, no self-respecting Southern lady would ever use profanity like that. I said, oh, I'm sorry.
I'm guessing she don't know about the pink chainsaw, right?
Yeah, I guess she does.
Because no self-respecting Southern lady would say something like that, even if she walked up to the a house in Green Hill, Alabama, in Lauderdale County, and found a couple of teenagers, a woman, and a grandma blown all to hell with a 9mm pistol. She wouldn't even say that then. That's what happened yesterday, you know.
No, yeah, I do. I saw it already. That was up Lauderdale County or something, you know, right? It was
Green Hill. Green Hill, right there on US 43, heading north out of Florence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just thought that was pretty pitiful. If something happened today, I can't remember. I can't even keep up with the news. I haven't read a newspaper in weeks and weeks. And anyway, Mike, I'm living now since Monday afternoon in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans, and have a nice volunteer village here. And it's in an old Presbyterian, it was a new Presbyterian church. I mean, it's new 20 years ago that took 5 or 7 feet of water, and then they converted it into a school, and there's a big two-story apartment-looking building behind the church.
So you're calling from New Orleans?
Yes, sir.
I'll be darned.
You just never know. You never know where I'm going to show up at. I said I'm on my way to, where is that?
Well, you're on the right side of the river for Iowa.
It's Iowa, huh? Oh, dear.
Or are you?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. Yeah, you're on the right side of the river for Iowa. get thee to Iowa City. Find thee a co-ed.
Oh, God. One with a sister. The Mississippi is, I'm the Ninth Ward where I'm at is pretty much rebuilt right in this neighborhood, but there's still lots of mess, but
don't got to walk far to see what ain't working.
No, oh no, like just up to the bus stop on the corner, yeah, and or the empty lot next to me. But the river's less than 5 miles from me, and so I sit in my little trailer window in the morning and watch the sun come up over the Mississippi, and at night I sit here in the window and watch it go down over Lake Pontchartrain, and I just can't believe that I'm in freaking New Orleans. I mean, where I'm at, what I'm doing has nothing whatsoever to do with the culture, the city, the nothing. It's just that's where the village is, and that's where I'm at. And I've got a 3-month commitment that's up about the 14th to 20th of May, so I should be heading back to the desert by then. But anyway, we're putting houses back together, and it's all, I was in Gulfport, and they're closing that, the Presbyterians are closing that camp up, and moving all of our resources west to Texas and central Louisiana because there wasn't much money allocated for Gustav and Ivan or whoever that other storm was. And so we need to put all of our efforts, they need to put all their efforts over there because, and Jackson County, I mean, where I come from, just, they just, we're not done. I mean, there's, grandma's still got leaking roofs and grandpa still can't get up their steps and it's just pitiful, but I only see the negative part. Other people say, well, we're making a lot of progress, Kate. I said, okay. Yeah, well,
you know, I had the good fortune while I was in D.C. a few weeks back to meet a lady from Past Christian,
mm-hmm.
and she said what you said, ain't much progress.
No, I mean, you get Robin Roberts' father's got a memorial built to him and Past Christian or something. I don't know what that was all about. He's a military vet or something. Anyway, and that gets all the headlines. And you see all the pretty ladies in their pretty clothes. You see all the houses and all the construction and everything, but you don't see where the white trash live. You know, I mean, they want us all out of here. I want the traders out. They want the MEMA cottages out. They want the FEMA trailers gone. You know, they want to clean it out. And that's the way it goes. So, and then somebody came in objecting to a tour guide who had made a lot of references like this, like the waste and the fraud and the greed and it's just not happening like you think it's supposed to happen. And some old guy came, from northern Michigan or something, came into the office and was screaming at the village manager, I don't think they should have political attitudes like that in their, we paid to have that guy. No, he volunteered. Their tour guide shouldn't put politics into their tours and you know, I'm not that much of a conservative, but I know that my taxes are, oh my God, he went on and on and on. But, you know, I mean, that I keep
in that sort of nasally northern Michigan sounding voice that sounds a lot like Ted Nugent kind of thing.
Yeah. And I say, don't you worry about that $58 billion that you sent to Mississippi because the governor's got that taken care of. It's right in the bank. Earning $10,000 a day in interest, and don't you worry about it. It's all just fine. Don't you worry about it. We'll get by somehow.
It ain't working. It's that money, that $58 billion, just living a life of leisure and taking it easy in the vault.
That's right. It's just sitting there, and, you know, I mean, it oh, no sense in even calling in. Ain't nothing's changed except my venue, and I'm getting closer to Arizona.
Well, I imagine you're probably eating pretty high on the hog there where you are, but word is coming in from the chat room that thou shalt pick up and take thyself to the Hummingbird Bar and Grill, 804 St. Charles Avenue. Excellent eats cheap.
Oh, I'm sitting in my truck with the phone plugged in. The Hummingbird?
Yeah, the Hummingbird Bar and Grill, 804 St. Charles Avenue. Assuming it's still there.
Oh, on St. Charles. Well, I don't know. I don't know that neighborhood. So is ask if it's close to the quarter.
Okay, I think you just did. Is it close to the quarter? Of course, there's some latency involved, and it'll take a while to roll back around.
This is really boring conversation.
Yeah, not the kind of latency that the National Organization for Marriage would have to be worried about. You know, latency like in all the people in the you know.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I look at those actors tell me if I'm off base, Kate, but I look at those actors and they are actors. You know, when you get a guy from New Jersey saying, my church in New Jersey.
He's probably queer. He's just out there hustling a buck.
Yeah, right.
Just a media whore. anyway, no, I'm not eating high on the hog. I mean, the volunteers, I shop at Sam's Club and bring the food back, and the volunteers cook it, so whatever they have, whatever's
on. Oh, okay. I figured it was probably still the locals and the scratch made ruse and.
No, none of that. I mean, those people. We do have one night a week where the homeowners are invited to come in for dinner and share with the people who are working at their houses and stuff. But they're not. I'm not eating on the economy. Not. Occasionally, some woman comes in and he went down here. I had some gumbo last night that wasn't even close to what I know. She's a caterer and she's Cajun and she knows fe potato dough, but she did gumbo for Northerners, you know, it wasn't even, I just kept smashing it with Crystal, and it didn't ever turn up the way I thought.
Gotta get some heat in this.
Yeah, it wasn't even, I mean, I guess she made it for people from Jersey or something, I don't know.
Yeah, let's lay off Jersey.
Yeah,
oh, by the way, I'm also informed that the Vermont marriage law does not have a residency requirement. So it looks like you're going to get one in Maple, sweeties.
Yeah, well, then I could just, on my next tour down here, I can just swing back up through Vermont, pick somebody up.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, I'm speaking this into the, this is dangerous.
Yeah, go to North Dakota and turn right. For a long way.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Speaking it into the universe, this is dangerous. I don't even like teasing the cosmos like this. I'm kidding. This is not me talking. I'm just making conversation for the sake of...
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
Don't be talking about it. It'll make it happen.
Yeah, this is squirrel hunting. You are sitting on a stump in the middle of the woods, got your rifle across your knees, ain't even looking for no squirrels. Of course, that's the problem. When you go about your squirrel hunting that way, that's when all the squirrels come in.
It's that same stump I sit on every year. Oh, God. Never mind. So, anyway, we're not making, we're making progress down here. Things are coming along. La-di-da, but I guess my best analogy is that right after the storm, you know, when people fall into a crack and it's, you know, they didn't get there on time or they didn't get the paperwork done or whatever, and you're walking down the street and you hear help, and you go down, oh my God, there's somebody that fell into the crack, we missed that one, and so you pull them out and help them and get the paperwork done, get their house made and blah, blah, blah. And then as time goes by, the cracks get deeper that people have fallen into and they get narrower. And there you hear this faint help. And you go, oh my God! And you got to scramble really hard and pull together all the resources and call 5 more agencies that are not funded anymore. And well, we can't help them because they're on the wrong side of the river or whatever. And so you know it gets harder to help those people because the crack is deeper. But now, after all this time, the cracks are deeper and deeper and deeper, and they're much narrower, and the sides are slick and wet, and they can't crawl out, and you hear this very, very faint,
yeah. In a way, and it's harder now than it was before.
Exactly, and the noise, the ambient noise is so loud that you can't even hardly hear the hell unless you're really, really listening or you're walking along looking for the cracks. Otherwise, they just get paved over, and that's it, and so people are just dying and committing suicide and, you know, they're just in the crack and they're never going to get out. Some guy came in today and said, I was working for, I don't know who he was working for anyway, and he said, I visited this lady and he said, I know poverty. I've worked in housing and I've worked, yeah, I know poverty, but I went out in New Iberia, the Dave Robichaud's hometown, you know, in James Lee Burke.
Yes.
You read him?
Yes.
Well, anyway, he was up in New Iberia, and he said he went out to this trailer where this woman had her 2 kids, and they were right out in the middle of a field. But he said, when I walked in, there's big holes in the floor. And he said, well, you're out here in a field, and the snakes, aren't you worried about snakes? She said, well, we killed a rat snake not too long ago. He said, well, if the rat snakes have to have something to eat, I mean, there must be. He said, can't you just cover up the hole? Well, I reckon. And so, I mean, she's just sitting out there in the middle of a field in New Iberia in a trailer with a hole in the floor and no way to get it covered. Mm-mm-mm.
Lordy.
So, I mean, that's just one example. A lady walked into my office the other day and needed a whole bunch of help and yada, yada, yada. And my daddy's died and the floor's never gotten, the brother never got the paperwork and the, oh, no, no. And I said, why don't you go to the store and get a piece of subflooring and they'll cut it in 2 for you. Just take your little bitty check and go do some beans and rice for you and your daughter, and then you can put cover the floor and then just put a little rug over it, so at least you're not going to step through the floor until you can get it fixed. Well, I never thought of that. Well, okay. It's just it's about not stepping through the floor. That's the big problem. How you're going to fix it's another thing.
Yeah, that's really the key going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Not putting the foot through, not breaking a leg.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's some distance there.
Yeah. I mean, you come in to get the whole house fixed, and I'm just telling you, just go get a piece of subflooring or look in the dumpster and get a piece of plywood or something and ask somebody in your church. I mean, they went around, and Jehovah's Witnesses went around and repaired all the houses around her dad. And I said, one of those old boys has got a piece of plywood in his garage. Just go tell him you need a piece of plywood. You're not even asking for nothing. Just say you've got a scrap of plywood I can use. Oh, okay. Well, my sister said the same thing. I said, well, you heard God speaking to you twice in the same day. Don't wait for the third time, girl. You get a leg broke. Well, I never thought of that. I said, you know how you feel good when you do something for somebody? And she says, uh-huh. And I said, well, who are you to think you can't? Who are you keeping the feel? Why do you keep somebody from feeling good by not asking? Go ask them so they can feel good and give you a piece of wood so you don't step through the floor. You know, I'm kind of an unorthodox repair person, but worried about her and her daughter stepping through the floor and breaking a foot, you know. So that's kind of how I do it. But big headquarters in Kentucky with Presbyterians, I'm looking around and I'm thinking the Presbyterians got as much money as the Catholics do, and they own as much property, and they're international.
Oh yeah, I mean they've got a pretty long start. I mean it all starts with Jean Calvin and John Knox.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's mm-hmm. you know that's right on the heels of Martin Luther. They've had time to raise some money.
Yeah, I mean they got it going on, and they're just they own so much property and they have so much money, and they're so international. It just scares me, and they give us. They give us blue cotton shirts. Presbyterian Disaster Assistance. Out of chaos is hope. Right, get out of here. I mean, I'm trashing them because we just had a bunch of bigwigs in here. They've been called the what's that?
Synod.
The Golden Rule people, the people who have the gold rule.
Oh, yeah. That, well, right, okay.
So, yeah, and so they weren't interested in me going over and starting up another village in Lake Charles, Louisiana, to utilize my skills as a startup person. And so I thought, well, screw you. If you can't see how good that would work out for you, then I don't even want to be bothered. So when my contract is up on the 20th or 14th or something of May, I'm out of here.
Yeah, you need some clean desert air for a while.
I doubt that. Yeah, I reckon. I just need to sit still. And I wrote home and said, is the treadmill still in captivity on the place? And she said, yes, it's in your little house because nobody uses it anymore. So I'm just going to go home and hit the treadmill and just keep running.
Run, Forrest, run.
That's a reference to a movie, I bet, huh?
Yeah, sure, of course.
I don't know. Oh, I don't.
Yeah, but everybody else is chuckling.
Bless their hearts.
I know. let's see. A couple of things rolling in real quick. Marty writes in and says, please go look for the nearby Costco. Don't give any more money to the Waltons at Sam's Club.
Okay, I'll address that in a minute. What's the other one?
The other one is from our buddy David in Tennessee.
He's still around?
Yeah. Who recommends and anything with a name like this got to be good. Willie Mays Scotch House. And it's in the Ninth Ward. It was there before and then it got rent. And it's still in the same building now, rebuilt in the Ninth Ward. Willie Mays Scotch House.
Scotch House. It's not rent anymore. His granddaughter has it. And I'm probably going to go do that on the way to a weekend game at watching the Zephyrs play Nashville Sounds.
Oh, that could be that could be right fun.
I'm gonna go find me a seat right behind the visiting team and on the dugout, and I'm gonna just pay $10 for the prime ticket. You know, And I thought I'd go to Willie Mays either the next day or the day after. And, yeah, I've got to do that stuff before I leave here. But, and about Costco, and anyway, thanks for the suggestion. And Costco, there is no Costco here. And I'm, and Louisville, are, that's where they pay the bills. And we have to do the click and pull to get the, you know, order the groceries online. And then they line them up and then you go pick them up. And I got a big,
right.
Yeah, so there.
So Sam's Club is above your pay grade, that choice.
What do you mean? I can't. I mean, there isn't any place to get cheaper groceries, and that's what they want, and that's all the. I'm not even sure they'd use Costco if they had it, but somehow we just are stuck with Sam's because that's where we can get bulk food.
Right.
We tried Cisco systems, but they're way too expensive, and they don't deliver. So I don't know how that worked, but that was years ago. And they want me to do I've got a company credit card that I pick up odds and ends with, and they, you know, they want me to only use Walmart because they're less expensive. Well, I do counterinsurgency so well. I go to the local stores that are owned by the people who work there, you know, the independent grocers. And
yeah.
I just go and I turn in my slips for milk and bread and stuff. And, you know, I'd rather go to the cooperative stores, you know, like Food Giant or something. And if they say anything, I'll just smile and say, oh, forgive me. I didn't mean to. I forgot. You know, I don't ask permission to use the local economy. I just can't stand doing that Bentonville crap. Well, they hire local people and they pay tax. No, they don't. They cash their till out at the end of the night and wire it all to Bentonville, Arkansas.
Yeah, and they get a tax break for being there.
Mm-hmm.
Turn around and arm twist their senators in Arkansas to make sure that those two Democrats will not stand up for folks being able to join a union.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's all a big ball of mess, and I don't even bother with it. I just smile, and I'd rather ask for forgiveness than permission, so I just do what I want to do. And if anybody says anything, I just say, well, I'm so sorry. I'll say, oh, and my last Dixie for Dummies, I was informed the other day from somebody, Go Heels, somebody from Durham, said, you need to remind these people down here who's thinking they're talking right, that y'all is singular. It's all y'all is plural. And I...
Oh, for... Daggum... No.
What?
Y'all is plural.
Mm-mm.
Uh-huh.
Not in Durham.
Well... That's
it's all y'all, all y'all. When you're talking to the room, how's your mom and them? How's your mom and them doing?
Mom and them's fine. Yeah,
that's another badge that you can tell where you can tell that you're from here if you say, "How's your mom and them doing?" And mom's just fine. But no, he said you need to inform these people who are trying to speak the language that y'all is singular. All y'all is plural. And I just cracked up. I said, well, that means I got to stop using Louisiana hot sauce and start using Crystal then, huh?
Oh, Lordy.
And I'm
such a heathen. That here's the free product placement promotion of the night. I don't use neither one. I use Cholula. I use even Southerner hot sauce. I use Cholula from Mexico.
Oh, well, ain't you special?
Regular and chili lime and chili garlic.
Ooh, lime sounds good.
Oh, it is mighty good.
I don't know how to spell it, so I wouldn't want to eat it.
Cholula, site of the famous massacre by Hernan Cortez of the locals at Chololan.
Well, ain't you smart?
I am. I got me some more Aztec words to say later in the program.
Well, then I'll be, I gotta go in. I gotta get out of the truck and go back into the computer so I can hear the rest of the program.
And I'll even say I'm halfway close to correct.
Yeah, I bet you do. the anal perfectionist that you are. Oh, well, okay. I'm out.
Hey, let's get, leave the marriage stuff alone, okay?
Oh, God, get out of here.
No, you. You first.
All y'all have a good evening. It's been good.
And y'all take care now, you hear?
Thanks for taking the call.
Oh, thanks for making it. I wait all night for calls like these.
I know you do. Bye.
Bye. Time to fire up a Chesterfield, I reckon. Plenty of Java and Chesterfield Kings. My Java's decaf. But we will keep it rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Rob.
Brother Luke, what's happening?
She is wrong. You all is plural.
That's what because
all means everybody.
Right, because it's not like French, where you've got a clear pronoun designating between second person singular, tu, and second person plural, vous, or the Spanish or German, or any, they all have a way of making you singular or plural. So we had to hopscotch and hodgepodge something together so that in Yankee speak, it's yous or yuns.
That's and single, it's yuns.
No, you, yeah, you ones. You ones.
Yeah.
But in the South, you all as opposed to you singular. You singular, you all.
Oh.
But then again, what are you going to say with a bunch of North Carolinians?
They think they blew up the first damn
basketball anyway, so, you know.
I know. The first story you had tonight,
mm-hmm.
Like you say, I still want somebody to explain to me, who are some people? I've always wondered about who are some people. You know, some people say.
Drives me batty, Luke.
Well, I mean, that's the Fox noise main thing. They always say some people, but they won't never tell you what people, who people, you know, give me a name, give me an organization.
Yeah, there's then you've got an agenda. For instance, Fox News, are liberals planning to infiltrate Tea Party events?
Oh, God, I tell you, I saw some of that, and I was just like, why? I mean, we don't want to lose that many IQ points. Oh, God. Oh, I tell you the other one. You were talking about the thing, you know, about the fundies and all that. I always remember what the best way is to make a fundie set his hair on fire.
Yeah?
The way I always – my best one was, you mean Jesus, that fella that hung out with 12 guys in the desert all alone?
Ooh-wee, you are heading for the eternal barbecue.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. It's sort of like you got to answer them questions too, son. You know, it's like that new one now. You know where they have talking. I can't remember which one it was. One of them was talking about whether or not being gay is you're born that way or if you develop it. And had the one that said no, you can't be born that way. And the fella asked him, okay, what day did you choose to be straight? Since you weren't born that way, you had to choose. So please tell me the date you chose.
And you never get an answer. Yeah. Well, it's like that silly young lady in that silly young actor in the video there. I am afraid. That's all she got to say. I am afraid. Years of Stanislavski and Meisner based acting theory, and you know, living it inside her brain. And I am afraid. You know, and the spear carrier in the back who's striding boldly forward. You know. It don't just do something. Stand there.
Got to give a shout-out to John Stewart. He had a twofer last night.
Oh, yeah?
Had the one about had Michael J. Fox was doing the thing, talking about, you know, where you know, he was talking about when, you know, when Limbaugh went after him, but he said it was just like a gift. Because we got to talk about stem cell research. In the last, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah, I saw that line. He said, we basically hijacked the election.
So we got to turn the whole story around because he gave us an opening. And then he had the one last night. Did you see the one where I sent you the link thing about tyranny versus losing? Said that tyranny, a.k.a. our democratically elected president. You know what, guys? He says, I think you might be confusing tyranny with losing. And I feel for you because I've been there. You know, it's amazing, some of this stuff. And, you know, it's like this stuff where somebody was talking about, you know, when they were bringing some complaints up about, like, Cheney and someone that criticized, they said, well, Vice President Gore complained about the Bush administration. I got looking it up just to double-check it. Yeah, September of 2002. That was 22 months after the election.
Yeah.
That's when he had that first speech, you know, talking about the screw-ups in the war. Oh, did you see the thing about Oberman had it on last night about this thing that the Republicans were doing in the Congress? Eric Cantor was sending them out to when new members.
Yeah, to attack the newbies.
Yeah, and he had the two guys doing the side by side. It was just hilarious. It's like you had to read it off a script.
They really are a pitiable bunch. It's kind of like what happened here in West Virginia during the legislative session. We had a senator and a member of the House of Delegates read the same speech on the floor in the same day.
Well, we both had the same good idea. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, never mind infinite monkeys with infinite typewriters. It just takes two here in West Virginia.
Oh, the other one I saw that kind of blew my mind was the thing about the shirt. Did you see the shirt that they were selling at one of the NRA rallies?
Is that the same one they were selling at the gun show? Hitler was a good speaker. Hitler gave good speeches too.
I mean, oh God, it's like, guys, it hadn't been 50 days, has it? Or, yeah, I guess it's been about 50, but we ain't even 100 days yet. And, I mean, these poor old boys look like they've been fighting for 20 years. It's like, guys, you got to get better material. This ain't even funny at the point.
No, what it is scary.
I know. Well, this thing with, it's like they were talking about, said, you know, that people are bringing this up now to Beck, and Beck's acting like, no, I didn't cause any of this. Just because I've been telling people that Obama was coming to take your guns, you know, and it's time to fight. And it's like, well, so when some guy guns down three cops in Pittsburgh, and when they go through his paperwork and all this stuff, they find out that that's one of the big things he was against was he was doing this so they wouldn't take his gun away because he knew they were coming to get his gun. You know, it's one of these things where you're just kind of sitting there going, you know, I understand that, you know, that our spineless Congress will not do anything in that respect. But somewhere down the line, guys, we, you know, it's like I said one time, you know, it's like the old Robin Williams thing. He said, I'll let you carry an automatic weapon, go hunting when you show me the deer wearing a flak jacket.
I know.
You know. You know, it's one of these things. It's like, you know, was it Virginia? They just pushed down a law that they were trying to push through the Virginia House of Representatives or House, whatever, where they wouldn't be able to sell guns to people with mental problems, and they killed that one.
Nope. Well, the crazy have rights too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and you know, thank God for that, because what I mentioned with Kate is very much on my mind, because that's down around where I grew up. Green Hill, Alabama is not far from Florence, and a guy who was in the middle of divorce proceedings took a 9mm pistol. You know, them 9mm, a whole bunch of bullets.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've seen 9mm Glocks will hold 17 rounds.
Yep.
And he took his 9mm pistol. And he went and blew away his estranged wife, blew away his 16-year-old daughter, blew away Granny, blew away a sister. Maybe he didn't blow away Granny, but blew away the sister, blew away the sister's 11-year-old, burnt the house down, and then went and did himself. Crazy people need guns.
Oh, yeah, I tell you. You know,
But you know, it being Alabama, let's remember that they will not have cannot have a responsible discussion about firearms.
I know. It's one of those things. It's like, look, folks, you know, it's like, you want to, like I've always said, I said, until I would love, one day, just love to hear Fat Tony speaking, and I'd love to be able to ask him the question. Okay, you say you're a strict constitutionalist, then fine. That Second Amendment, that only applies to flintlocks, right?
There you go, and muzzle
right now,
loaders.
The rest of the Constitution has to apply what was going on in 1776 and 1787. But that one there, that one can jump and move around however it needs to be as time goes forward.
Well, yeah, because that's when the Constitution suddenly transforms into a living document.
Yeah. Everything else in there, it ain't, but that one is a living document. It can mold itself as to the times.
Machine guns.
Well, like I say, you know,
assault rifles.
What was it? They showed it one time, I think, on one of the shows. Maybe it was Oberman, where you know they have some of these groups where they get together and they pull out like the Gatling gun, the new version Gatling guns, you know, and shoot up cars sitting out in a field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't even want to know anybody's has, you know, it's like knowing people have rights to 50 caliber guns. 50 caliber guns kill people at a range of 2 miles.
Aircraft.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I want to know who owns these things. I want a list somewhere somebody to have.
Yeah, but see, Luke, that's only because you hate America.
I know. How dare I?
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, well. I tell you what, bud, let me let you go on. I see it's about the top of the hour, and you've got some more people to talk to.
All right. We'll be talking soon.
You have a good evening.
All right. Take it easy, Luke. Bye now.
All righty. Bye.
You know I speak in jest when I say that you hate America thing. I mean, but that's the way the right wing is. If you question for an instant, look, let's be honest. I'm going right to the phones. But let's be honest for just a daggum minute. Just a minute. I said it the other night, and I stand by my thesis. I don't know of anyone, and I'm talking about the sane folks too, who at the end of the discussion, in regard to handguns, not shotguns or deer rifles or squirrel rifles or muzzle loaders or any of that sort of thing, but in regard to a discussion about handguns. When you get to the end of it all, and I include myself in this, okay? Anyone who purchases a handgun at some point in time contemplates the use of it on another human being. You know, nobody's a bigger proponent of liberal handgun ownership than our buddy Bart Cop. And when he rationalizes his ownership of a handgun, he says, if some freak comes through my door, I'm better off with a handgun than a ball bat. That's open to debate. But he clearly is contemplating the ownership and use of that, not for hunting, not necessarily for target shooting, but for the elimination of a human threat. Shotguns do as good a job. Wouldn't want to be discharging a deer rifle in the house, but those things, you know, muzzle velocity, 3,200, 3,500 feet per second, that's going to go through two or three houses. Or could. But handguns? They're meant to kill other people. Whether your concern is self-defense or... Well, I like to target shoot with mine. Yes, you do. But you have it because at some point you contemplate the need of using it on something besides a target. And that's not, and there is nothing inherently wrong in admitting that. But we are awash in stories of people using such firearms in horrific ways. Rogersville, Alabama. Rogersville. Little community, Rogers High School, not Rogersville. Rogers High School at Green Hill, Alabama, was shocked senseless. 16-year-old member of their softball team, bright, vivacious, and beautiful, blown away because daddy couldn't get along with mama. Blown away because daddy had easy access to handguns. As long as you can show a driver's license, you can have a handgun in Alabama. As long as you can prove residency. Phew. I suppose this is just so much more useless hand-wringing that God, even the kindergartners at Rogers, were wearing ribbons today. Kind of hard to hold it together under those circumstances. So I tell you what, we've got a couple of people on hold, and I am going to get to it. But let's do take a little break. I went 3.5 hours last night without a break, and I don't think I want to. Let's just take a little break, and we'll come back, and we will go absolutely hog wild with conversation radio. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
The love of love is in your eyes, the look your heart can't disguise. The look of love is saying so much more than words could ever say. Yeah. A look my heart has heard, mama, it takes my breath away.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Six minutes past the hour, and per my promise, let's keep it cooking. Let's go to the phone. Let's see. Okay, try again. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yogi Bob, I have climbed the perilous mount, the perilous Horn Mountain, and I bring a digital tablet of enlightenment.
Enlighten me, Guru.
Okay, the first thing is since it's National Poetry Month, I've picked a poem.
Okay.
It's called, this is from Mildred. It's called The Grandfather Clock. Jabberwocky. Excuse me, does anyone have the time? No. And then it starts. If you knew what makes me tick, it'll probably make you sick. Lay my days of my life in front of you, and I'll let you take your pick. Come on, pull back the curtain, but make sure that you are certain that it will be worth the energy that you end up exerting. Now walk past the doorway, step in the foyer. Don't you bother knocking, I'm a grandfather clocking everything you do. I'm seeing through your faultiness, so sprinkle me, but not with saltiness. The ghetto taught me this. I fought for this. I fight for this. I spend my life for this. And if you put your brain to work, it ain't hard to decipher this. Counting down the days, boy, closer to your doom. Timekeeper for the reaper, the family heirloom. Like staring at my grandfather clock inside my room, it'll never miss a tick-tock. It strikes every day at noon. Every noon on the hour, it'll sing a tune. Every half hour, it'll croon and yell out at the moon. You can't escape the master time. No one is immune. The hands of time will grab you when the moment's opportune. No one is immune when the moment's opportune. Carved from a tree trunk bark, what a wonderful work of art. Well, I usually wear my sundial, but it don't work when it's dark. No electric parts spark as mechanical as he is. He'll kindly say, just wind me, and then show me where the key is. Then I go about my day, and I flow about the way. He never has nothing to say. He just sits there on display. I seen one in the cafe, one inside the cabaret. Timekeeper for the reaper. What a pretty price to pay. So don't you bother knocking as I'm grandfather clocking. Everything you do, I'm seeing through your masquerade. At midnight, you will hear the serenade. And don't you be afraid. It's like clockwork orange lemonade with the bottomless glass when it's time for that ass. Tick-tock, my grandfather clock goes. The pendulum is swinging, and it just don't ever stop. Tick-tock, I used to have this cuckoo clock that would bother my grandfather clock. Never gave it no rest, so I flew over the top of the nest. And then at my request, I asked him to resign. He was never on time, 1 hour behind. At 10, he stuck at 9, but he did not fuck with mine, because I murdered that machine. If you ever beat the clock, you know exactly what I mean. I hold my grandfather clock in high esteem. My alarm clock screams because he knows how long it takes me, but my grandfather clock leans over and he shakes me, and they both race against time to see who will be the first to wake me. But when I become awoke, my alarm clock was broke, and my grandfather clock was staring right down my throat, and he leaned a little bit closer, and he told me, and I quote, if you ever race against me, you will surely come up short. He said, I'm better than your Timex, your Rolex, or your Swatch, your fossil Casio quartz, your diamond-studded watch. He said, I control how long you stay alive. I'm going to tap you on your shoulder 11:55. When the time arrives, and only then, you'll have your 5 minutes of funk. I said my final salutations as I stepped among the monks. Then he took me exactly where I stood, like he should, and I tried to reason with him, and I tried knocking on wood. But he said, I'm a grandfather clocking.
By?
That one is by A.C. Alone. It's actually a song off a book called Book of Human Language, and it's actually it's set up to be like a concept book. And it's about time and death, mortality, the illusions of self. And I put up A.C. Alone. Yeah, I put up A.C. Alone as close to as Saul Williams for the West Coast. He was a pioneer. He's been doing this for, he's been in this game for like over two decades. And he has an amazing ability at doing these sound paintings as they are. I think it was fitting for what we were talking about with Mildred.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And when I heard that, I mean, I instantly thought of, like, the album, Book of Human Language. And see, the problem with Google is this is something that I don't think a lot of people think about, but transcribing lyrics is really, really time-consuming. And a lot of people don't do it, but sometimes you get lucky and you come up with songs that were transcribed like this. There aren't many songs transcribed by A.C. Alone because, again, you have to get sometimes college students will just have some time on their hands in their dorm and they'll just type them out. And A.C. Alone has about, I think he's into his seventh or eighth album. But he's always been one of my favorites. He's a pioneer on the West Coast. I've always loved his stuff. So I thought that song was appropriate.
Yeah. Reminiscent also is, because, you know, I'm a little geezery.
Yeah.
Reminiscent of Time from Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon.
Yes, that's true. But, you know, also, we also have a rhyme scheme and a similar imagery to, like, something of, I'm guessing that he was really influenced by Edgar Allan Poe.
The epigram would indicate that he was influenced by Lewis Carroll.
Oh, Lewis Carroll?
Yeah, because Lewis Carroll, let me check here real quick.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, too.
Yeah, let me, yeah, he made reference to, I screwed up. Hang on just a second. Yeah, there it is. He made reference to the grandfather clock.
Oh, okay. And this is a familiar.
Yeah, because you mentioned the I heard the word Jabberwocky there as well.
Yeah.
Which is also Lewis Carroll.
And this is a poem of Lewis Carroll's?
I'm not sure if the grandfather clock or grandfather's clock. I'm not having any luck right now.
Yeah.
It's
allusions to it. He probably the beginning is probably the quote and the inspiration is. You're probably right. It probably is influenced by the poet.
Yeah. Well, the poet, writer, mathematician.
Right.
Let's see. Let me see it. Maybe I can find it real quick here. Maybe this. Let me see if I've got it real quick. We'll get it in a second. Father. It might be a reference to Father William.
Hmm.
You are old, Father William, the young man said, and your hair has become very white, and yet you incessantly stand on your head. Do you think at your age it is right? In my youth, Father William replied to his son, I feared it might injure the brain, but now that I'm perfectly sure I have none, why, I do it again and again. You are old, said the youth, as I mentioned before, and have grown most uncommonly fat, yet you turned a back somersault in at the door. Pray, what is the reason of that? In my youth, said the sage, as he shook his gray locks, I kept all my limbs very supple by the use of this ointment, 1 shilling the box. Allow me to sell you a couple? You're old, said the youth, and your jaws are too weak for anything tougher than suet. Yet you finished the goose with the bones and the beak. Pray, how did you manage to do it? In my youth, said his father, I took to the law and argued each case with my wife. And the muscular strength which it gave to my jaw has lasted the rest of my life. You're old, said the youth. One would hardly suppose that your eye was as steady as ever, yet you balanced an eel on the end of your nose. What made you so awfully clever? I have answered three questions, and that is enough, said his father. Don't give yourself airs. Do you think I can listen all day to such stuff? Be off, or I'll kick you downstairs.
That is a good bookend to it. You're probably spot on about if you asked him, you said, did you get this from?
But anybody who references Jabberwocky, You know, Jabberwocky is nothing but nonsense. 'Twas brillig in the slithy toves, did gyre and gimble in the wave, all mimsy with the borogoves and the mome raths outgrabe. I'd say there has to be a Carol influence there.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. A couple things on the. I don't know if you saw, since we're talking about gun violence. Did you see what I sent you?
Yes, I did. And in fact, I referenced the recent shootings in Lauderdale County, Alabama, but I didn't get around to the one that you sent and a couple of people sent this along. And this one especially sick because it gets caught on security video. Whether it's Alabama, Bible Belt, or Florida, fundamentalist land. In Florida, a woman at a gun, takes her son to a shooting range, one of those indoor gun ranges, right? And the kid is standing there shooting at the target, and the video shows mommy raising a handgun behind him and shooting him in the back of the head and then blowing herself away. And then there's this big guy to the right of him in the photo, just really the final photo that was released, where he's turning around going, hey! And they're just both laying there dead. And what was astonishing to me was in reading the copy about it.
Yeah.
Neighbors said the woman had a history of mental illness, but she wasn't so mentally ill that she couldn't get her hands on a handgun for her son and a handgun for herself.
Did you see the notes that she left?
No, I did not see the notes.
See, this is why I said it, because it ties into exactly today, prayer meetings. She said, me and my son, we need to go to heaven now.
Oh, Jesus.
This is becoming like a national psychosis that I don't think, if I were the Obama administration, the first thing I would do is I would start planning, to have a panel on, gun violence. There needs to be some serious discussions and serious talks again.
But see, that's the point that I keep trying to make, David. We cannot, in this country, have an honest discussion about gun violence. Because the psychotic din blaring out of the headquarters of the NRA that sits hard by the eastbound lanes of I-66 in Northern Virginia is so loud.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially now. I mean, Jesus, there's stuff that's being made up. What show? I guess it was David Schuster sitting in for somebody else on some MSNBC show. Blistered the hell out of some Second Amendment goon who was saying, Obama's going to take, just ask Rahm Emanuel. He's about, and for all intents and purposes, the guy was speaking in tongues.
Yeah. I think the best way to do it is get some of those borderline NRA moderates on the panel as well.
Ain't no such animal.
There are some people there who like guns, who understand that we have a problem with in this country regarding gun control and violence.
I took the magazine for a while. I joined up just for the hell of it, just to see what they were talking about. Anybody who advocates anything except everybody gets to have a tank, anything less than that, and you are not welcome in the National Republican Rifle Association.
Mm.
Because what the modern goal of the NRA is to militarize and weaponize America's gun owners. which is terrifying. And see, I mean, the guy in Pittsburgh, he wasn't using a machine gun. And you can buy an AK-47 semi-automatic. All semi-automatic means is that you don't have to cock it every time. It's just bang, and the expanding gas from the combustion of the powder blows the shell out, and a spring pushes the next round in.
Mm.
Blows the casing out, and the bullet goes down the barrel. That's all semi-automatic means. And, you know, you can have big old clips full. Like I said, Glock makes a 9mm pistol that I believe holds 17 rounds. And all you got to do is stand there and bang, 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 bang. Fresh new bullet every time you pull the trigger. Bang, bang, bang. And it was a 9mm pistol that this bastard used in Alabama.
Mm.
And there's nothing illegal about it. I mean, it's not like he was using, you know, a Browning automatic rifle or a Thompson submachine gun with full automatic. And that's why we can't have the honest discussion, David. Because to a certain degree, at least fairly intellectually, honestly, law-abiding gun owners will come out and say, but what about me? I just keep my handgun around in case I got to shoot somebody as crazy as that. And it's hard to argue with those people.
Yeah.
You know, there are violent fundamentalists out there. Here in West Virginia, there are people who are in the mining industry, both underground and mountain removers, who are losing their jobs now because, you know, like we discussed last night, they're being rationalized by their company, which means fired, means you can't make the house payment, means somebody's going to come and get the shiny new pickup truck and your big old TV that you got at Walmart last year when coal was a booming.
Mm-hmm.
Are they blaming the coal companies? Are the coal company CEOs walking around with bodyguards? No. No, you know who they're blaming? They're blaming the environmentalists because they've been so thoroughly weaponized for so long by the likes of Don Blankenship and you know, the little flyers that come in their paycheck. Be grateful you got this paycheck today, coal miner, because the environmentalists don't want you to get many more of them.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you bring up clean coal because there's actually an interesting discussion. Well, it's interesting in the fact that the Independent Women's Forum, I know you're going to hate this, Bob, but the Independent Women's Forum has decided to take up the issue of clean coal. And they brought one of Tom Hartman's opponents on his radio show, and she had no idea. I'm not making this up. She had no idea about clean coal, and she actually said this. She said, hold on, let me look at my computer screen on the damn radio. On the damn radio. And Tom is just sitting there like, all right. like she didn't even have the talking point. She knew. See, this is what I'm talking about. How can we have an honest discussion of this if people now, they're not even coming to the table prepared with their talking points?
Well, look, and really, it's not just guns that we can't have an honest discussion with. I mean, I know right-wingers around here. And they're not just quite hopping up and down, frothing at the mouth yet. And I can sit there and say things like, that simply isn't true, and I can back it up. But they still go, no, 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 you're a liberal. In other words, because I'm a liberal, the truth ain't in me? You know, I'm sitting here every night, and sooner or later, you or Luke or somebody else who is tuned into this kind of thing will note, you know, some ridiculous, scurrilous, not even marginally true, manifest, humongous falsehood that's been put out there by Fox or Hannity or one of those creeps. And we know it. Because we, you know, we sit there and go, and this is point A, here's point B, and it goes to point C, and then out of point C, he makes point G. And they don't connect. But nobody's doing that for the Fox viewership. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day, I said, you know, I know you watch NBC, MSNBC about as often as I watch Fox, and he goes, oh, man, I can't stand those liberal people.
Oh, man. The cycle, the circle will not be unbroken.
So we can't, you know, we can't have an honest discussion about guns. We can't have an honest discussion about government. We can't have an honest discussion about spending. You know, there's going to be one of these tea parties all over the country around April 15th. And why? Because they're mad at Barack Obama for spending money. But they were nowhere to be found, David, when four times as much money was being spent by the Bush administration on a purely BS bogus war in Iraq.
You know that there's so many numbers thrown out in our mainstream media that when you do mention to them that, yeah, I do think it's over a trillion, people will say, no. I've gotten that so many times. It's not over a trillion.
Well, did you see the number revision on what the so-called toxic assets are going to wind up costing now?
Oh yeah,
it's gone past 4 trillion. I recognize my own limitations, David. I don't have any business using the word trillion.
Yeah, exactly.
It ought not be in my vocabulary because I can't conceptualize it. You look at the heavens at night when it's on a cloudless night and you're far from any light pollution, and you see that massive field of stars up there that's the Milky Way, and you know you're looking sort of sidelong through it. You're not looking, you know, because we're part of it, so we're looking, we're on the outside arm looking back in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's billions of stars, billions of galaxies, we're told.
When you think of
trillions, trillions, I can't play trillions.
Exactly. When I think of trillions, I immediately get like a scene from John Nash's Beautiful Mind in my mind. He's on the chalkboard and he's just trying to work out this equation, and you can't do it. So this is the problem I have with people who bring up this issue regarding spending. I mean, it's just. It's insanity, the fact that, I mean, when you ask a lot of these people who are really, really hard on regarding social issues, the fact that should these bankers be penalized, criminalized? No, no, no. Let the market sort it out. And it's just, it's insanity. And it looks like Tim Geithner and company, it looks like they want to believe the lies from the temple that's coming out on Wall Street.
I mean, I just sat here and ran it off on my fingers like a moron. Trillions is 10 to the 12th. That's a 1 with 12 zeros. What is there that we can count that way? Are there a trillion cells in the body? I don't know. But we're talking about trillions of dollars in bogus assets. I mean, look? Can we find some new way of talking about it, David? Can we stop using 4.2 trillion and just say massive fraud?
Did you watch the Bill Moyers William J. Black interview?
I haven't seen it yet. No.
I'm gonna put it up on the boards and. So people can view it. I think everybody needs to see that, or at least read the transcript, because he talks about exactly. He was the one of the major proponents in the savings and loan scandal, and he wrote a book called "The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One." And what he talks about is exactly how the scam goes, and why no one's doing anything about it, and he really goes into detail, and it really is what Sandra was saying last night, and it's really the Hall of Merits through the Hall of Merits through the Hall of Merits, and I don't really think there's an answer if people are deathly afraid. All we can do is really talk about it, and that's the problem we face. While trillions, as you say, are in toxic assets floating around the globe, ready to strike at any minute like a thunderstorm or something. Before I go, I just wanted to mention that I've filled up the boards I have a few things that people may be interested in. I have how Disney makes money. It's a humorous video. You'll like this one, Bob. Some guy decided that he was going to find out, all right, I know Disney's cheating at animation, so where's the scene? So he went through Robin Hood, and he went through Snow White. And it's like a six-minute video where he compares dancing scenes of the same it's the same damn scenes. They literally just
where you turn one set of characters into dogs or cats or elephants and bears or
right. Well, with like the square dancing, like there's one where they bow down on the knee. There's one where the snake. Oh, the Jungle Book. That was another thing they had. Scenes of the Jungle Book. You know, with the snake and the mesmerizing eyes. They like to do that one a lot too. You watch it and you just laugh, and then you think, holy shit, how long did this guy have to put this together? I mean, he even has music in the background and all this. I mean, if you got some time, you know, I put it up as for something funny. I also put up, I caught what Albert was saying about Kevin Richardson and the Lions, and that documentary is up too. So you guys can check that out. I have a story up on Jeremy Scahill's op-ed from GNN talking about Obama's neoliberals selling his Afghan war, and it's really interesting, and I think people should check that out as well. There's a lot of things that people need to check out at headonradionetwork.com/forum, and there'll be a lot more coming. For example, the two documentaries I put up, I'm talking about, these are just one links, people. These are one links where you can stream. Boom, boom, boom. Trent Reznor, Dig Dialogue, that's like 40 minutes. The Kevin Richardson Lion documentary that Albert was talking about, that's 55 minutes. That's all ready to go. Anytime anyone wants to check on the boards, just go to Anything Goes. And I've made it easy for people. You just type in Lions, that post is going to come up because of the tags.
Oh.
You type in Trent Reznor, that post is going to come up because I put Trent Reznor.
Ain't tagging grand?
Tagging is great. And one other thing that I wanted to say about this, and I think it's a good idea to do it. We have a lot of people talking on the networks, but I think one thing that we seem to forget is a lot of people are not going to be listening to the radio show all the time because of work and other engagements. So I thought about this, Bob. I thought, what if we did this? One night a week, we have someone logging the links and the information that people are doing in real time on the Head On Radio Network forum. So, for example, Monday, I would start, and if we have Preston call in, we make sure we get all the links that Preston's talking. While I'm listening, we would put up all these links, all the books that he recommends.
Excellent idea.
So people get an idea. Then Tuesday, we have someone else volunteer for that day. I think if we do this, listen, I think if we do this, people, we will have a great, it will be a great summary for people who never thought that they could get this information. They do this with Howard Stern's, but that's ridiculous because Howard Stern's program, he doesn't have anything the same except he talks about tits and retarded people. And specially challenged people, and that's what he does. That's his gimmick.
Is that why he had? Is that why he had Arlen Specter on his show the other day? Sorry, that was unfair.
So here's my challenge to people. I fill up the forums, and I try to do it. I have about 16 new posts that you guys can check up from today and tomorrow. But here's my challenge. I will take the day for Monday. If someone else takes the logging day for Tuesday while they're listening to the program, and basically all you have to do is when you listen to the callers and they mention something, just grab the links of the information regarding whether it's an article, whether it's a documentary, and just make it so everything's hyperlinked so people can go through it and kind of like give a brief summary of every caller that calls as well. And I think this would be a great addition, And I think a lot of people would start taking notice that who do not listen in.
Well, let's see if we can get some volunteers to take one or two.
I'm already down for Monday. I'm down for
Monday. Okay, that leaves us Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And there's no complications. If I happen not to show up on a given day, then nobody has to do it that day.
Right. And so what you do is, so that people understand, we're going to post. Oh, by the way, I did put up the Nation article you were talking about, Old Europe, New Again. That's in. I've decided everything that you mentioned, the articles you mentioned, that's going to go in the Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid forum. So we'll have that filled up in no time. One thing that I wanted to say regarding also the Twitter thing. I had another idea about that, Bob, and I know you're running close on time. So
no, don't sweat it. Take your time.
All right, the Twitter thing. I think we should do this. I just came up with this idea, and it'll give you an example of how serious I am about this. By the way, I have Chuck Grassley now as a Twitter member, and he saw my Prosecute G.W. Bush name. That's crazy. I could never do that anywhere else. But on Twitter, I can do that. But here's my idea. What I want to do is I want to open the door to people on this account. And how do I do that? Well, the people that listen and the people that we trust, I'm going to give Bob my password to my Twitter account. If you guys want to add names at any time, this is the beautiful part about it. If you want to add names at any time, if you want to add something on that page that's specific about the issue of prosecuting the Bush administration, you can do it because you'll have the password, you'll have the key, and in a sense, you are this account as well. That's what I want to do. I want to make everyone this account who wants to be included and involved. If you're wondering and you're sitting there, what can I do? Here's what you can do. We have something set up right now under twitter.com prosecute GW Bush, and you will have the password to go there, and you can add and include anything you want. And the beautiful part about it is we'll be sharing the time and energy that it takes, and it's not just going to be one person.
Oh, that's a tremendous extension of the paradigm.
Yes.
That's really cool, Dave.
Yes, I think that's what we need to do regarding that. And here's the other thing. This is the reason why I'm doing it. Just so people know, oh my God, this guy's volunteering for everything. No, listen, this is one of the reasons why I'm doing it. Because when Bob Alexander had raised the money, I went on his site and I checked it, and I did not contribute the money. It's been on my mind ever since that I didn't contribute the money. So in a sense, I'm a debt slave, but in a good way, to Bob Alexander. So
I'm not bragging, and it certainly wasn't much. And I hope the folks who contribute will not mind. But when I heard about what Bob Alexander was doing, it wasn't much. But I kicked $10 that way.
Right.
Because, you know, I like you, I felt like some sort of effort was necessary, that somehow or another I had to be able to say that I was part of this, not to salve my own conscience, but rather to try to build the sort of intellectual weight, the cultural presence for it. And, you know, if that paid for a chunk of one book going to one prosecutor, good. Because, you know, there's a whole bunch of them. And they've all got, you know, if a few of them read it and find it even remotely remotely possible, then something might happen.
Exactly. So just to recap, if you want to go, I'm going to be sending Bob my password for the Twitter.com prosecute GW Bush. This is going to be included for everyone. Probably the best way to handle this is the people that Bob knows on a basis, maybe the people in the chat room. I'm sorry to not include everyone, but this is an issue of trust that I'm putting out there. And I want people to be involved in this. And this is the best way that I think we can put our energy together. And you can include, you can put any of the links, anything that you think I missed on these Twitter updates. I usually do about 5 or 10 updates a day, something like that. So you'll get an idea when you read some of the listings and what I say to, like, senators and congressmen. I've hit up Jame Hampshire at Fire Dog Lake, and I've told her to keep her eye on this. Because my whole idea and strategy of it is here's the metaphor that I look at it. We're on a conveyor belt. The conveyor belt is passing us. Slowly but surely it's passing us, and we can't just sit there and do nothing. So we have to do something regarding this, and this is my idea regarding this to go viral. And I think we will go viral eventually when we get the right networking and we get the right synergy and the right momentum. And that's, again, why I'm including people into this. Because I think you do...
Well, that concept that you raised, that the opportunities are passing by,
yeah.
I think has truth in it, David.
Yeah.
I saw an editorial cartoon the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed, it was the caricature of a dim former leader, you know, George, sitting in his recliner at home in front of his big screen TV, watching Obama on the TV, and Obama is saying, "We must heal our disagreements with Europe." And dim leader hollers over his shoulder and says, "Hey, who's Europe?" See, that's one of the insidious things about this so-called Tea Party movement, mm-hmm. is that its intent has nothing to do with improper spending or too much spending. The real intent behind the Tea Party movement is to make people forget whose problem this is, to make people forget who created this problem. It's like people having rallies to complain about the New Deal when everything that necessitated the New Deal was created by the succession of Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover. Okay? These, you know, how many days are we into the Obama administration? This ain't his problem. He's trying to solve the problem, but he is not trying to solve his problem. He's trying to solve the problem that was intentionally, deliberately, and wholly done by the Bush administration. You know, credit default swaps were a thing of the past by the time Barack Obama was inaugurated.
Mm-hmm.
But their effects are still felt. The first bank bailout, some $700 billion, happened on George Bush's watch. The economy collapsed on George Bush's watch. You know, I'm not making excuses. This is just reality. This is what the man has to deal with right now. This month after month of, you know, 600,000 jobs lost, 500,000 jobs lost, 900,000 jobs lost. These are waves that are lapping onto the shore right now. That were sent cascading toward us months ago, and in fact years ago. You know, I remember very, very well, David, back when dim leader was running for president against Al Gore, and he said, "The economy's running too hot. We need a tax cut." And then people looked up and went, "Holy hell, he's going to be president!" And the and we went into a recession,
mm-hmm.
which they promptly called the Clinton recession.
Exactly.
And then a couple of months later, once the economy had gone to crap, dim leader was out there again saying, "The economy has cooled off. Only a tax cut will heat up the economy again." And so all this Tea Party nonsense, all this right-wing, righteous, phony indignation has absolutely no pure purpose to it. It has absolutely no patriotic value. It is entirely a creation of right-wing PR firms that is generated to try to hypnotize or entrance or mesmerize the American people into thinking that Barack Obama has created some sort of a problem when, in fact, he is simply trying to deal with the holes in the boat that he found out about when he got the helm.
No argument from me here. I think what we need to do is we need to stay focused, and I'm going to be moving along right now. But just to recap, headonradionetwork.com/forum. I'll tell you what I'll do Thursday and Friday, and for the rest of this hour too. What I'll do is the people that are calling. This is how we'll handle this. This will be slick. All of the people that call that are calling. You will have tags. So you'll be tagged. So if people want to find out what Albert said this week, well, you type in the tag, if you missed a few days, everything's going to come up what Albert said. If people want to hear what Luke said, Kate, whoever, Sandra, just whoever's on there, we're going to have everything linked in such a fashion that people can just go to the forum and they'll be able to see exactly what they were missing, and they don't have to scan through podcasts to hear select people if that's what they're after. And I'm going to make it easy for you people as much as I can. I think that's just a good start to do that. So Thursday and Friday and for the rest of this hour, I'll cover who's doing what. I know if Preston calls, Preston, I'm going to have you this time, man. We're going to pin you down, and not literally, we're going to pin you down, and we're going to get all the information out of your Colossus supercomputer mind. And I think that's a great way to handle this, Bob. I really do. I think a lot of people who come in the forum, I know the people who don't have the time. Kate, you don't have the time? Well, guess what? We're going to make it easy for you, for a lot of people who missed the program, because I feel your pain, not to pull Clinton, but I think that's the best thing to do regarding that issue. The other thing I want to mention, the Bill Maher, the new episode, has been up since Friday. You can check it out. It's all in chronological order. The Lion documentary, as I'll mention again with Kevin Richardson, if you guys were interested in that, there's a direct link. You can watch it. Easy. It takes about, I don't know, 2 minutes to load. You don't need to download it. I'm making this easy for you people. Easy. And
it's easy. I must be crazy.
I mean, this is my concept, Bob. I know that the momentum, that there is a moment where everything will spark. But what I want to do is I want to inspire people regarding this forum, because I don't want it to be a ghost town. The same thing with the Twitter thing with the prosecutor G.W. Bush. I knew no one was there, and it irked me to no end. So, in closing, everyone check out the forum. I'm going to send you the link to the Twitter prosecutor G.W. Bush, so people can go in, type in the password, and add what you want, whether links or information, or just to see who I'm talking with. It's up to you. So I'll pass that on. I will pass the you guys tonight. As soon as I get off the phone, Bob has another hour. I guarantee you this: all of the information that people are calling, all the links, all the articles, all the people that they're mentioning, that will all be on the Head On Radio Network forum starting now.
Cool. Talk to you later, David.
All right, later.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. And Horn Forum Guru as well. The moderator of the Head On Radio Network forums, Fora, is Lottie, also a moderator in the chat room. And there are great tools there for you to use. There are great resources there for you to use. Please do. Keep the dialogue going even when the programs aren't live. That's my way of thinking about it. It's about 12 minutes before the hour. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. Locally or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333 is the number. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. The David brought up the issue of the woman shooting her son. It turns out she did not purchase the gun. She rented the gun. That's right. We have gun rental. And it's all captured on video. And this being prayer meeting night, I guess it fits. Among other things, she said, "I'm so sorry. I had to send my son to heaven and myself to hell."
She thought she was the Antichrist. Her son was 20 years old. They went to the Shoot Straight Range in Castleberry, Florida. The son thought they were going to do some shooting practice. She left another note saying, "I'm sorry to do this in your place of business." She apologized to the business owners. "I'm sorry to do this in your place of business, but I had to save my son. God made me a queen, and I failed. I'm a fallen angel. He turned me into the Antichrist." Hopefully, when I die, there will be 1,000 years of peace. See, that's part of the whole apocalyptic end times eschatology. That the 1,000 years of peace will follow the defeat of the Antichrist. Sitting here watching these photos in a slideshow go by, and I'm just saying, I keep saying, "Oh, son, don't stand in front of you. Don't turn your back on your mother. She's religiously insane. She believes magic stuff. She believes in zombie God. She believes that dead people come out of the dirt." And see, all that business about "I'm a queen," that comes straight out of phony Christian fundamentalism. You can go and hear that kind of crap in virtually any mega church in the country today. She needed help in a country that affords so very little help. Four people were shot at a Christian retreat today from a Korean Christian sect that went about trying to help the homeless, feed the hungry. Temecula, California. Two of the people who are still alive are described as critically injured. The gunman is among those in the hospital being treated. See, that's what happens. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, people are sane. And they know that the dead don't rise and walk. They know that crackers made of wheat flour don't turn into protein-laden meat, human flesh. They know it doesn't happen. But on Sunday, anything's possible. And they form little groups, and they and athletes make the sign of the cross of them on themselves. In the end zone, "I just want to thank the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ because I crushed the hell out of that ball there in the ninth inning with that walk-off home run." And we can't have an honest discussion about gun violence in this country. And by the way, I want to share something with you from our buddy Eugene Finnerman. Horn host Mark Levine is on vacation this week for Passover, and Eugene Finnerman also offered today's. A little essay Eugene did on Passover as well. Eugene is also Jewish. He said, Dear Bob, you might find this essay a useful contribution for prayer meeting Wednesday. I will be suffering with my in-laws tonight. Egyptian bondage could not have been worse. Take care till then, Eugene. Eugene says, Jews throughout the world, any place big enough for a store, are now celebrating Passover. We speak of it as a feast because Jews have a wonderful sense of humor. Matzah is the original styrofoam. If the Exodus actually occurred, archaeologists would be finding 3,500-year-old matzah crumbs throughout the Sinai. But there's no historical evidence to corroborate the story of Passover. You just cannot believe everything that the Bible and Cecil B. DeMille tell you. Egypt was a highly literate and sophisticated society with a bureaucracy of scribes who would have recorded everything on time-withstanding papyrus. Someone in the quartermaster's office would have written in triplicate a request to replace those waterlogged chariots, and Pharaoh's media department would have proclaimed mission accomplished in driving the Jews away. This is not to suggest that the Jews did not exist at the time. At the height of its empire, from the 15th to the 13th century B.C., Egypt held hegemony over Canaan. The cities of Canaan repeatedly appealed for Egyptian help against invaders known as the Habiru. Although the Canaanite and Egyptian records never allude to any theological idiosyncrasies among these nomads, there is little doubt as to who the Habiru were and would become. So there is historical evidence of the Hebrews' conquest of Canaan, but the invasion came from the east, as a proper Semitic invasion would, not from the west. Why did the Jews claim to be escaped slaves from Egypt? Were the ancient Jews as status-conscious as the current readers of the New York Times? Did they fancy the glamour of Egypt over their hard-scrabble nomadic life? On the contrary, the Torah reveals in the primitive Bedouin culture, the Torah revels in the primitive Bedouin culture of the Jews. Their enemies, the Egyptians, Canaanites, and Philistines, lived in cities, an indication of their corrupt natures. The ancient Jews never aspired to Egyptian refinement. However, they may have thought it worth looting. In the 17th century, Egypt was conquered by a Semitic horde known as the Hyksos. Perhaps in that invading army, among all those Semitic freebooters, there was a contingent of Habiru. Someone had to operate the PX and organize the USO shows. And when a century later, the Hyksos were driven out, the Habiru survivors might have spoken of their hasty departure. Of course, there could be a theological basis for the story of the Jews' triumph over the Egyptians. God was padding his resume. Nobody deconstructs a story quite like the Internet's most brilliant satirist and ironicist, Eugene Finnerman. Which sort of brings me to this. And I don't want to get in trouble for this. I'm not, that is not my intent. But, somehow or another, it's almost impossible not to note this. On the one hand, you think, ah, this is nice. On the other hand, you think, ah, this ain't going to be good. Tomorrow, Thursday, President Barack Obama is going to do something no other president has ever done before. Tomorrow, Thursday, President Barack Obama is going to participate in a Seder at the White House. The White House's schedule for the remainder of the week, as released by the press office, says President Obama and his family will mark the beginning of Passover with a Seder at the White House with friends and staff. He has issued an official White House letter with his warmest wishes to all celebrating the sacred festival of Passover, with some blessing that I can't even begin to pronounce. But welcome to the slippery slope of religious pandering. Is he going to? Well, no, he's not, because he can't, because that has already been foreclosed. Because if he did, all the right wingers would scream, "See, I told you he was a secret Muslim." He certainly can't participate in the fasts of the month of Eid al-Fitr. Nope, can't do that. Now, he's photographed in this particular story I'm looking at. He's photographed with his little white yarmulke on the back of his head. That's all well and good. I'm one of those ecumenicalists who, while I hold no religion to be sacred, will respect anybody's traditions. And if I go to your house and you want me to wear a thing, you know, if I have to sit down to the table and naked with a barrel over me to satisfy your God, then I'm wearing the barrel. So no big deal over the yarmulke. But this is going to really, really piss off the Muslim world. Because just as the little right-wingers over here are screaming, "He's a closet Muslim," over there they're saying, "Well, you know, look, he's got a chief of staff who isn't even solely an American citizen. He's also an Israeli. He's in the bag with the Israelis. He's a Zionist." And trust me when I tell you that that does not play well on the Muslim street. So he's damned if he does, and he's damned if he doesn't. This is a clear case of pandering. This is a clear case of saying, you know, all you nervous AIPAC types that think I don't love Israel enough, see, look, I got the headgear. But everybody else now has a right to expect that their religious holiday will be observed at the White House. But you know what? I'm guessing there's not going to be an observance of Samhain at the White House. I'm guessing that on November the 1st, what has been transformed into the Day of the Dead in Mexican Catholicism, with all kinds of macabre business of having dinner on top of your loved one's graves and stuff, that ain't going to happen. Go through the list. I don't think any of the feasts or fasts attendant upon Hinduism or Buddhism are going to happen at the White House. But this is most assuredly going to piss off the Muslim world. And then there's an element here in the United States that's going to think that, along with the Muslim world, that he's in the bag for the Zionists. Because it's Wednesday and it's prayer meeting, I just want to ask, wouldn't it be just a heck of a lot easier to keep religion out of government? Whatever your religion is, can't you celebrate that? Can't we celebrate that, follow it, feast it, fast it, do whatever on our own time without expecting the President of the United States to somehow tacitly, explicitly, implicitly, whatever, give approval and notice of it? Because the acknowledgement... It follows from the fact that that whoever is a follower of one religion is an atheist unto all the others. It follows from that when you observe one religious observance and you don't observe the other ones, that you are at the least overlooking and at the most slurring them. And trust me when I tell you that religions are one of those things that just don't like to be slurred, because people get all crazy and they kill each other in the streets and they have wars and they get pissed off at each other for 3,000 years. How many Kenyan native ceremonies will be observed in the White House? How many animist ceremonies will be observed in the White House? Well, Bob, he observes them all the time. See, that's the thing. He ain't really Christian. He's probably atheist. Jesus. You know, I make up these little voices in my mind, but they're not really made up, because I've heard it all somewhere before. Oh, President Obama, why'd you have to go and do this? You know, he shows up in Turkey, for heaven's sakes. And a newsreader, oh my God, a newsreader describes Barack Obama's visit to Turkey while wearing blackface. And says, "Welcome, Mr. Obama. You took our hearts with your hospitality. We appreciate your kindness. We will do whatever America asks of us as friends. Now we ask the same of you." And he does it in blackface. Now, to be fair, Turkey does not necessarily understand the whole racial dynamic of the United States. I would think they would have heard about it by now, but I can't be for certain. So the folks writing about this over at Think Progress say, "It is unclear whether this is a spoof or whether the anchor is trying to show respect to Obama, as others have suggested." I'm an American. In 2009, I have a hard time looking at blackface as anything but what I perceive it to be, and how it has been represented in the past. There are those who operated in that medium who were non-racist, who were not intending to demean, but were simply working in a medium. I'm sure there are people who would take issue with me over that simple statement. But to see, how is it not? I mean, if George Bush went to Turkey, would this guy have shown up on camera with his face done up in clown white? Fair question. And that is by far and away not the end of the program. We've got a little bit less than another hour to go of this prayer meeting evening. You're welcome to chime in with your thoughts. We'll take a little break and come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn.
Everybody knows his name. He said there's no doubt about it. It was a myth, the fingerprints. I've seen them all, and man, they're all the same. Well, the sun gets weary and the sun goes down. Elvis is the watermelon, and the lights come up on the black pit town. Now somebody, well, it's not just me and it's not just you. This is all around the world. Out in the Indian Ocean somewhere, there's a former army post, abandoned now just like the war. And there's no doubt about it, it was the myth of fingerprints. That's what that old army post was for. Well, the sun gets bloody and the sun goes down. Ever since the watermelon and the lights come up on the black pit town. Somebody said, what's a better thing to do? Well, it's not just me and it's not just you. This is all around the world. Over the mountains, down in the valley, lives the former talk show host.
far and wide his name was known. He said there's no doubt about it. It was the myth of fingerprints. That's why we must learn to live alone.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Going right back to the phones in a sec. I hope you're still there. I want to share an email with you. Just got this from our buddy Chris a little bit earlier in the day. And it's sad news, and it's all too typical news. But I hope you will take it in the spirit of honor with which it was offered. Because he, like so many others, feels a developed sense of family with us all. And just shared this information when it came his way. Just sort of, you know, checking in and letting us know what's going on in his world. He says, "Hey, Brother Bob, I have some bitter news to report. I felt compelled to write you this message because I just felt the need to vent out my unset and let down. Today I was informed that I'm going to be getting laid off from my job. I'm a graphic artist at a major paper. Yesterday our boss told us that our jobs would be getting outsourced somewhere else. Who would believe that an art position would be able to get outsourced? I guess in this day and age of corporate greed, downsizing, and a depression, anything's possible." Chris says to me, art is one of the cornerstones of our society. It allows freedom and creativity, even though graphic art is for commercial profit. It saddens me to no end that someone's taking that away from me. This is my life, my past, present, and hopefully my future. The company's been doing layoffs for several months now, but it seems that there's no end in sight. It's like cutting off my right arm. I honestly don't know what I'm going to do with myself or how I'm going to move on. Granted, I'm young, single, and still living with my family, but my heart just goes out to my fellow coworkers and Americans around the world that are not as fortunate as I am. One person here has a baby girl on the way. Another's been working at the paper for 30-plus years and feels like she's been screwed out of everything she's worked so hard for over the time span. I was thinking about calling into the show tonight, but I don't think that I can pull myself together to tell the story, because chances are I'd burst into tears, anger, and depression. I feel that now, more than ever, is the time that we as Americans, not just liberals, conservatives, Democrats, Republicans, come together and realize what this country has become. Corporate greed and the factor of the almighty dollars and torn the foundation of this country apart. I don't think that President Obama, his administration, and the rest of Congress really get to see what's going on with America. Look at how job loss and unemployment are playing out in this country. Because right now, I don't think they get it, and I believe that they never will. If I had the money, I'd go to the front gate of the White House and stand there and protest for the president. Anyway, I need to figure out what I'm going to do with my future and career as an artist. I just wanted to thank you and everyone at the Horn for all you do, and being the voice of the people, I'm truly grateful. Signed, Chris.
These humbling, humbling moments that come my way. All that I do, all that we do, it's all that you do. And I'm honored. Lord, I'm so honored to have that shared with me. And Chris touches something that is a nerve with me, talking about the woman who's been working at the paper 30-plus years and feels like she's been screwed out of everything she's worked so hard for over the time span. How much is enough? How can you possibly work 30 years for one company doing anything and not be entitled to walk away with your head held high and the rest of your life taken care of? How? You know, what happens to the guy who said to Chris, well, you know, son, we're outsourcing your job. How do you go home after you do that? You call ahead and you say, honey, I'm coming home and I had to do the dirty end of my business today and break a lot of hearts and ruin a lot of lives. So make my martini a double on the way in the door, would you, sweetie? And you get up, and the next day, it's another day. And the next day's another day, and the next day's another day, and the next day's another day. It saddens me because I was raised, my mother wanted to be a newspaper writer. She had a scholarship to college when she graduated in 1943. But the Second World War and fascism got in the way, and she wound up in a munitions factory somewhere in Maryland. But writing and reading and creating was always very important to her, and she passed that along to me. When I sit down and string a couple of sentences together, I do it with her over my shoulder. She loved newspapers. She loved journalism. And pass that on to me. And it's heartrending to see the American newspaper industry kill itself. Because for the most part, it has. And I don't know, you know, I read a lot of Mark Morford over at sfgate.com, and he's waxed philosophic on this same issue quite a bit, and he doesn't know what the answer is either. There is a place for professional journalism in this country. There had damned well better be a place for professional journalism in this country, or this country's on the way out. An assault mounted on legitimate journalism that started right after the crushing defeat of Barry Goldwater in 1964. The stuff that Luke talks about with some people say, and what I was talking about with headlines that end in question marks, titillation and salacious reporting, and because there's a determination that the American people no longer have either the capacity or the stomach for real, straight-up, straightforward reporting. And any reporter worth his salt is always going to be engaged in a dynamic struggle with what he or she believes and what she must do and must write in order to maintain a job. And that goes right down the line to the editorial cartoonists, to the editorial board, it extends into the graphic arts department. Newspapers are damn near sacred to me. But by bowing to the right wing and by working hammer and tongs to make sure that they didn't get criticized by the right wing as being liberal, they have choked themselves. And I don't know what the answer is. But I know that there are a lot of talented, scared people out there, people that Chris mentioned, who ought not be either talented or scared. Because when we lose any semblance of unbiased reporting in this country, well, then we're in bigger trouble than maybe we know. And we are at the mercy of the CNNs and the Foxes and that ilk. I hope you're still with us.
Hey, Bob.
Well, hey, Juanita.
I wanted to tell you something that happened yesterday. I think it was yesterday. I was watching TV. The View was on. They're reruns this week, but they were having the comedians on, and I love comedians. And anyway, then they had an interruption of the show, you know, like ABC News interrupts.
This is a special like report.
And I thought, oh, God, you know, what's happened? The president's overseas and all. And it was about him making a surprise trip to Iraq. And, of course, you know, it was Charles Gibson. And this is another reason I don't like the person, that person, is he starts saying, well, why didn't he go to Afghanistan? And then he keeps talking, and he's talking about Bush going over to Iraq, you know. And anyway, it wasn't like a professional filming or anything like that, but you could have understood some of the things what was his name, Barack, was saying. Oh, God, I'm awful. Anyway, they just kept interrupting, so I thought, well, I'm going to turn and see if I can find it somewhere else. I could not find it anywhere else. Nothing else had it on. And I could get CNN, I can get, C-SPAN, and kind of can see why they wouldn't have had it. But nowhere else had it on. That was the only place that had that on. And I thought that was kind of strange, because I know every time that Bush went anywhere, I mean, boy, they had it all on there, you know.
Yeah, all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. But kind of struck me that
President Bush had soup today with the Queen of England. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, President Bush's helicopters landed in the gardens that have been there for hundreds of years and tore up. Did you know about that?
Oh, God.
When he was over there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do remember. Right, yeah.
You know, he had food taster and he had his own cook.
Oh, I remember when he went to Austria and they collected his poo.
Oh, yeah. I think they've done that other two before. But anyway, they were talking about how many people that Obama took on this trip, like 500. And I forget who it was I heard talking about this. They counted it over 750 people. And he also took... they had the helicopters, they had all kind of, they had like the two planes and all that kind of stuff. And
right.
But do you know that Bush and then they wanted to close down London?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When
he
went over there? Now, see.
Oh, I remember when Buckingham Palace wasn't secure enough to suit them, and the Bush administration sent over architectural guidelines for making Buckingham Palace safe enough for a Bush.
Yeah. And also, the mayor of London. Now, I've contacted this guy before. Some of the things, you know, I thank him, you know, because I don't know if he's still got the same one or not, but he was always right back. And I saw where he said, no way am I going to close down the city of London. No way. And I sent him an email about that. I said, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate it. He said, well, criticized for all of it, but he sticks to his guns. And like I said, I don't know if he still is, because some way any of my contacts with overseas have been cut off at least 5 years ago. I was in contact with somebody from, you know, this American citizen that's over, lives over in London. He's married. He's married to an English woman, and that was cut off, too. So I don't know if the, what the reason was, but that's what happened. But anyway, I just thought that was, he was saying that Charles Gibson said, well, why didn't he go to Afghanistan? Well, maybe he did. Maybe it wasn't.
But see, there's no such thing as enough.
No, Especially with,
you know, this is the same for-profit media that couldn't for the life of them bring themselves to report the fact that when George Bush showed up with Thanksgiving dinner, he was carrying a rubber turkey.
Oh yeah.
I mean, really, I don't mean to make too much out of that, Juanita, but really, is it too much?
That was shown too when it was happening. Like, did you see how he served those people, you know, the troops? How he served them? Like he just limp-wristed. Plop, de-plop, you know, dipping up, you know, I think it was two or three people he
ka-flot,
served.
Ka-flot, ka-flot, ka-flot. Here's your gravy. Ooh, you do that laugh really well, too. Let's do that again without me interrupting. Go. Yeah, exactly.
I'm not getting it right, but I got it right a little bit.
Nah, I think you're pretty close. You're closer than you need to be.
But I was listening to the guy today, and he was talking. I thought he had a pretty good idea, and I can't, unless you heard it, but it'd be well worth going back to listen to what he had to say about how to solve the banking problem. And I really like his idea. I thought, hey, why can't we have him for Secretary of Treasury?
I know it seems like the people that have the ideas are the people that are far that are, well, you know, like Krugman. Yeah, what's wrong with listening to Krugman?
Yeah, just at least listen. I thought that was what they were going to do, was listen to others. And you know, I might could give them a few things to think about. I don't know about the money thing, because I haven't always been very wise about money, but anyway.
No, sometimes I wonder, Juanita, if this is really as complicated as they like to make it sound.
Yeah, I don't understand this banking deal. I really don't, because it seems, to me, it seems like the automobile industry would be a lot more important. I don't know if you were going to compare, but then what? I don't know. I just don't. And of course, I believe it was. Guy was saying, you know, this didn't happen. The first money that went out to them, that was on Bush's watch.
Yeah. It was. I mean, it really, really was.
Uh huh.
That was the $700 billion that happened before Obama ever went into office.
Yeah. But your friend that wrote in, what's his name, Chris?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a male or a female?
Male.
You know, it can be both. True. One. I had a good friend, Chris. She passed away. My heart goes out to him.
It's terrifying. It is truly,
yes,
terrifying.
It is. Well, you know, I've been fired at least twice. I can't remember, in a very dramatic fashion. I've been threatened other times. People ask you, why did you leave this certain job? Well, if your life is threatened, wouldn't you? But, you know, you can't tell them that, because then you can't. It's hard to find jobs, you know, after all those things happen. And I don't know why I disturb people, but for some reason, I used to think it was some look on my face or something, but I don't know. I think it's a combination of things that I probably didn't realize and all. And then I am inclined to say things that I probably shouldn't say on jobs, that it's not kosher to say. But on the whole,
you mean the truth?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't as outspoken as I am now. I mean, you know, I held a lot back, but, still sometimes you just couldn't help but say something.
Right.
But if you do, it's like that, you know, like in school, obey authority, obey authority.
Yes, indeed.
Obey authority. And so, you know. But anyway, well, I wish I was able to do that. What you were talking about with the website, but I'm not sure I know enough to do it right. I can't hardly get on the website.
Well, the website is much better now.
Is it okay?
Yes.
I thought it was me. You know.
Well, no, it's beautiful as it stands, but there have been some technical problems that John and
Sue
have.
I mean, I've been able to get on it, but I never can figure out the blob. Of course, I've had that problem in the past too. When I used to listen to Radio Left, he gave me a free blog, but I could never use it. I could never get into it. But I don't know why. It's just a hang up in my mind, I guess. Just
well,
like I've got these.
Sometimes it's the interface. Sometimes it's easier than others, and that's
yeah.
That's one of the things that John and Sue have been working on.
Well,
I've
never been
making
online
it easier.
If it hadn't been for my son, you know.
Oh, really?
I couldn't figure it out, and I'd been using computers way before he just had a natural gift for it. No, I'd have never gotten online if it hadn't been for him because I don't know. It's just I have to be shown and shown. And maybe write things down. And, you know, there's things that I've done over and over again now that I know and probably know more than a lot of people. But, you know, I'm not – it's something I really have to learn. You know, it's like some people, like you said, your son can pick up an instrument and play it. Well, I'm the type of person I have to be taught. Dadgummit.
Yeah, well, we all have different ways of learning. So
Yeah. But
you know, you keep at it, and I'm proud of you for it, and I do too, because I'm going to have to sit down and get a tutorial probably from Sue on using the blog myself, because frankly, I have not poured a ton of effort into it, simply because I've not had a ton of time to do it with.
Yeah.
And I know that may sound just absolutely crazy to people who are used to the format. But there's a lot that goes into the world around here, and it's, you know, it's when I sit down to write something, just doing it in a word processing program is bizarre enough because it's just, you know, because it involves my mind.
Well, it's when I write, I go nuts, and because I want it to be right, absolutely correct. And
well, I've got a 3,500 essay. I've got a 3,500 word essay right now that I've got to peel 1,500 words out of. And just the thought of it is mind-boggling.
You don't like to let them go.
Well, they're like little electronic children. Those words.
Yeah.
So okay, I'm not entirely out there. You get what I'm talking about.
Well, I do. Like I relate. I'm a liberal. I'm an independent thinker.
Independent thinker. There you go. Yep. Well, Juanita, good hearing from you, dear.
Okay, and you take care and. I hope you don't get downwind from that tragedy.
Well, that
they're hiding.
Well, that happened in August, but we're trying to find.
Oh my God! You're kidding.
No, it happened in August. That's the what Juanita is talking about is the Bayer Crop Sciences plant explosion in Institute, West Virginia, which I sent you an email earlier. I think they ought to rename I think they ought to rename Institute to Bhopal, West Virginia. Because then maybe people would get the idea that, you know, there's that level of toxicity there. I mean, there's a state university. The state of West Virginia's historically black college is in Institute, West Virginia, and is ground zero for anything god-awful that happens with that methyl isocyanate at that plant. Imagine
that. It was something that just happened. I hadn't heard about it before.
Well, yeah, I mean, just think about that. No, it happened in August. But we still don't have the full facts of what happened, and we're trying to get some sort of an investigation going.
Well,
just consider the irony of this. The state's historically black college is across from the state police academy and a toxic chemical dump.
Yeah.
The state's historically rich little white kids' college is across from the state capitol.
Oh, okay. Well, it do make you wonder, don't it?
It do.
Do it? Yeah.
It do.
Yes, it
well,
does.
I need to take care, dear.
Okay, you too.
Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye now. View correspondent Juanita. And, I mean, you can't, it's hard to just blow past something like that and not notice it. But, yeah, the I'm trying to think, maybe True Majority or, I can't come up with offhand who it was that was talking about putting some pressure on Bayer. And by the way, the part of the plant that blew up in August was the part of the plant that was making the pesticide that was partially responsible for bee colony collapse syndrome. So there you go. It is prayer meeting night. It's about 24 minutes before the show ends. And I got this fascinating story. I love the News Ninja Gene, who gets up every morning and reads the entire Internet. I'm not kidding. I'm constantly amazed by the stuff I get from Gene. But he follows a blog called The Wild Hunt, wildhunt.org. And there's tons of great information there. The subtitle in The Wild Hunt is A Modern Pagan Perspective. And this story came my way via News Ninja Gene from The Wild Hunt. Headline, Saint Death, Non-Pagan Easter, and Anti-Witch Hysteria. It was the first one that grabbed me, and I mentioned this, I alluded to this in my conversation with Kate earlier this evening. You know what a nightmare the drug prohibition has created, especially along the U.S.-Mexican border on the Mexican side. In the town of Nuevo Laredo, there is a roadway that has shrines, more than 30 shrines, to a deity that they refer to there as Santa Muerte, Saint Death. 30 shrines, complete with electric lighting, statues of Saint Death depicted as a skeleton. They've got an archbishop by the name of David Romo. Some of these shrines were clad in marble. And last month, Mexican law enforcement, featuring Mexican army troops, accompanied workers who went to this lane of Saint Death, Santa Muerte, and used backhoes to topple and crush those 30 shrines. Santa Muerte is popular in that region because life is cheap and death is easy. Santa Muerte provides comfort to people who fear imminent and violent death. Drug dealers and communities that they ravage are both frequently devotees against Santa Muerte. And Santa Muerte is an overlay onto Catholicism of a deity that is 3,000 years old? Older? 5,000? 10? Because there is a long history of a rather frank acknowledgement of the shortness of life and its more often than not sad end in that region of the world. I find it admirable. And long before there was ever a Roman Catholic Church in what we now call Mexico, in the Valley of Mexico, where ruled the Mexica people, the Mexica nation, the Mexica Empire. They had a class of knights. There were jaguar knights, eagle knights, arrow knights. And at the entrance to the arrow knights' lodge stood a pair of grinning statues, a San Muerte. He had a different name, this deity. His name was Mictlantecuhtli, which roughly translated is Lord of Mictlan. Mictlan was the Nahuatl word for underworld. He was, in fact, and isn't it fascinating to contemplate that two peoples as disparate as, say, the ancient Greeks, who came up with the concept of Hades, the god of the underworld, thousands of miles away, would be mirrored in Mictlantecuhtli, in among the Nahuatl-speaking people. He was his headdress was shown decorated with owl feathers and paper banners. He wore a necklace of human eyeballs. He was, in fact, macabre. But his macabre qualities were a reflection not of death, but of life. He was so powerful that he was depicted by the Mexica people as having an open mouth that received the stars that descended into him during the daytime. He had a wife who was Lady Mictlan, Mictlacachihuatl. His familiars were spiders and owls and bats, the 11th hour, the northern compass direction. And there is nothing, there is not 10 cents worth of difference between Mictlantecuhtli and Santa Muerte. You can take a people's culture from them. You can take all the outward trappings of who they are. But they manage to hang on to some level of cultural tradition. And the modern element in Mexico, in an effort to stamp out a horrible problem that is our making, not theirs, or drug prohibition that creates the death and the violence on the border. The government, in an effort to stamp out that violence, is taking it out on an imaginary being and people who find solace in it. Do I think it's rational to find solace in such an imaginary being? Nope. But I myself am at least rational to enough to understand that there are a million varied reasons for people to be irrational, especially in the face of death. Archbishop David Romo, is it David or Diego? I don't know. Of the cult of Santa Muerte, you know, they're not sacrificing chickens or anything. It's just a death cult, just like Christianity. It's a death cult. He said, sometimes people look down on us because we believe in her, Santa Muerte. But my faith is bigger than somebody looking down on me. Oh, I'm sorry, that was America Melendez, a 24-year-old street vendor. who was marching along with a red-robed statue of the saint. This manifestation of, I guess that would be Mictlantecuhtli, not Mictlantecuhtli. But there was also another manifestation, a female manifestation, a goddess whose name was Filth Eater. You can see why the Roman Catholic missionaries were a little bit sideways when they got to what they were fondly calling Nueva España. Because there they were with the true faith, and they land on the shores of what would become Mexico, and they find everything, all the religious stuff intact, right down to the pure God who left but said he would return in the form of Quetzalcoatl, or Kukulcan in the Maya mythos. And they even found the presence of a last rites ceremony. They even found confession. Because, in fact, the Mexica peoples, the Nahuatl peoples, you know, they warred among themselves, but they had a largely common pantheon, similar to all the warring peoples and tribes on the Greek peninsula. All knew about Zeus, all knew about Hera, all knew about Athena and Aphrodite and so forth, and Poseidon, and yada, 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 Hermes. Well, they had a confessional god by the name of Tlatzolteotl. See, Kate, I told you I'd say him right. Tlatzolteotl. And her name translates as a filth eater. And she was a goddess of purification. And confession to her upon death would cleanse one of one's sins. Anybody ever? How about that? She had another name. Tlalequani, meaning she who eats sin. She was the patron goddess of adulterers. She was also the patron goddess of midwives and the patron goddess of purification. And she was also the patron goddess of something that the dirty, filthy Spaniards who arrived on the Mexican shores had never heard of, the steam bath. She was a goddess of cleansing. She was a cultural manifestation of those people's recognition that they wanted to be inwardly and outwardly pure, because the Mexica society was rather conservative, if I understand correctly. Steam baths. And among other things, it was thought that she could cure sexually transmitted diseases, the dreaded Nananua, by a steam bath. And, of course, there's some folk wisdom to that. You know, you clean it up, and you're maybe a little less likely to catch the, you know, but you know what I mean. And so the Mexican army and the Mexican police find themselves in what will soon be 500 years later, still at war with the same gods that have stood ever present over Mesoamerica. I find that fascinating. I just do. This is, of course, Holy Week, so-called. It is Passover week, as mentioned. Holy Week, in which Christians celebrate the triumph of the death cult of Christ over the life cult of Christ from some 1900, 1800 years ago. Sometime soon, Agnes will begin threatening to crucify a chocolate in the front yard. And all this because human beings come and hope that maybe they don't and can't deal with that fact. What kind of work, you say? Well, I can tell you. Juan Alberto Ovalle was literally the voice of Christ in Spanish. Listen.
Como también Juan enseñó a sus discípulos, y les dijo, cuando oréis, decid, Padre nuestro que estás en los cielos, sea tu nombre santificado, venga tu reino, sea hecha tu voluntad como en el cielo, así también en la tierra. El pan nuestro de cada día, dánoslo hoy, y perdónanos nuestros pecados, porque también nosotros perdonamos a todos los que nos deben. Y no nos metas en tentación, mas líbranos de mal. Les dijo también, ¿quién de vosotros tendrá un amigo, e irá a él a medianoche y le dirá, amigo, préstame tres panes? Porque un amigo ha venido a mí de camino, y no tengo que ponerle delante. Y él de dentro respondiendo dije,
Luke chapter 11, wherein his disciples come to him and say, Lord, when we pray, how shall we pray? And he responded to them, saying, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil, for thine is the power and the glory forever. Amen. That was Juan Alberto Ovalle's job. He was the voice of Christ and, in fact, the voice of the Bible for Focus on the Family. For millions of Hispanics, he was the soothing voice of salvation. Imagine how surprising it was when that soothing voice used his fingers to type via the internet a message to a person he thought to be a just barely teenage child. Telling her that he wanted her to sit on his face. And that he wanted her to put something else of her girl attorney's office in Colorado. It went beyond ordinary, if there is such a thing, dirty internet talk, however. When he got into his car and drove to an undisclosed location in Lakewood, Colorado, to meet what he thought was going to be that less than 15-year-old girl, and he 42 years old, to do things unspeakable to her. Focus on the Family spokesman Gary Schneeberger said, We are all shocked to hear of these allegations, and we're just beginning to look into them. Just as people were shocked when Brother Ted Haggard turned out to be a Crystal Methodist. But these are the followers of the fundamentalist version of the Prince of Peace. And to be doing this at the time of Holy Week? Stunning. Simply stunning. to even use the word hypocrisy is not sufficiently fitting. Evil begins to work. Yes, evil does. So there's our closing story, our kicker. The voice of Christ in Spanish, seeking sex with little barely teenage girls. Meanwhile, Pastor Rick Warren of Saddleback Church was involved in an interview with Hugh Hewitt. Well, asked Rick Warren, the man who prayed at the inauguration, Hugh Hewitt asked him if he was surprised at how much of a target he had become. Rick Warren answered the following: "No, because as much as I want, my number one goal in life is to have a Christ-like ministry, to treat people the way Jesus did. And Jesus hung out with prostitutes, tax collectors, and all different kinds of people. Today, he would have hung out with Democrats." No kidding. He said it. In Rick Warren's twisted little fundamentalist world, being a Democrat is the equivalent of being a prostitute or a tax collector in the days of Jesus. Praise. So that's prayer meeting for tonight. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Sorry about the burps in the internet for those of you listening live. You won't know it if you're listening by podcast. Thanks to all of you who do so much to support the ongoing efforts of the Horn. We need you now more than ever. And we are lagging severely behind in April fundraising. If you can't, that's fine, and I understand why on a variety of reasons. If you can't, just keep tuning in. Keep sharing the word of the conversation that we are trying to engender here. Tell others. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thanks to John Fox, our webmaster. Chief overworked man in liberal talk. It's going to take a lot of help. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org, fighting day and night upstream for all of us downstream. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.